I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello, and thank you for listening to the Guitar Nerd podcast. If you'd like to hear more of this absolute waffle, pop over to patreon.com/guitar nerds, where for as little as $5 a month, you'll be able to become one of our Patreon exclusive backers. That means that not only do you get more of us, well, actually, that's it, you just get more of us. But if you pay $10 a month, you also get your name read out at the end of the podcast. Usually Joe does it in a silly voice. This week it's me. Hopefully, it will be me more often. Thanks very much for listening to Guitar Nerds. Take care.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Matt Knight.
Hello.
And Jay Cross.
Hiya.
No Joe Branton this
Thank
week.
Yay.
Evans.
Yeah. Oh, no. He's off on his American adventure. So hopefully we'll be seeing some fruits from that. Did he put some stuff up in the group or Facebook group already?
No, he just texted us.
He's staying somewhere where the fella who owns it has got loads and loads of cool old pedals, so I'm sure he'll put some stuff up on the group fairly soon. And is he going to the Fender?
He's going to Fender Custom Shop.
Yeah, just to have a look around. I think he's booked in some time.
Is he going to the Dream Factory?
I don't know where
is that
he's
what
going.
It's called?
I don't really know. He's going to one of them. Maybe he's just going to the visitor centre.
He might have just been talking about getting a custom shop book. I don't know. To be honest, when he starts talking, I just tend to switch off.
Yeah, I just don't really listen to what he says.
I'm sure it was Fender. It might not have been. It might have been Taylor. I don't know.
Something
in California.
I think it was Fender. Because the visitor centre, you can build your own Strat, can't you? And then they like post it to you or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah. He's definitely coming back with a jazz bass.
Yeah, I think he'll come back with something. Something weird. Matt Knight, you were off last week. How's this week been?
It's been all right. I've been playing guitar. I bought some guitar pedals from America that I thought we might be able to review because I don't think we could get them sent to us. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to get these and I'm going to we can use them for demos and stuff. So I bought it hasn't arrived yet, but a company called Marvel Effects do something called I think it's called the Ramble Drive. It's the same colours as like the Iron Man suit. So I was like, well, that is cool anyway.
Okay. Is this what they call Marvel Effects?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
And, wow, that, how are they getting away with that? I'm not sure. That's pretty mental, isn't it?
I had no idea. But so I got that and it's like a Marshall Plexi. And what I thought was interesting is that it's got a master volume control, but it's got two gains, like what's called high volume and low volume, like a Marshall Plexi, and obviously when you jump the inputs.
Are you sure this company's not called Ramble Effects?
Oh, maybe it is. Well, I'm getting confused.
I think we've got some of those coming.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
These guys are definitely just they're definitely sat in their factory in wherever it is in the US, being like two orders to the UK. These things are really picking up. Little do they know, it's the only two people.
I can't remember the exact details, but yeah, I think maybe we've got some of these on the way. Because don't they do a few? Don't they do a Fendery one as well?
I don't know if that's the only one they do, or whether they do another one. I can't remember. But yeah, that, and I also got a Mad Professor Sweet Honey Overdrive.
I saw that. Which
is really, really nice. And I've been talking to Roland about maybe trying to get a System 1M and seeing how I can incorporate a modular synthesizer into my...
Right on.
Well, because I was talking to Jamie from Roland, and he had... Because obviously they do a load of Eurorack stuff that can be controlled via iPad, but you can plug your guitar in and then you can patch a load of stuff around on your guitar through like Eurorack effects. And I was like, wow, that would be really pointless and cool. So I was like, maybe I'm going to try and do that.
So what effects do they actually do as part of the System 1?
The System 1's actually got like a delay, a reverb and a bit crusher in it.
Okay.
But it's obviously, because it's a synthesizer, it's got filters. So you can run your guitars through those filters.
Yep.
But because everything on the front panel is MIDI controllable, you could potentially use something like an ES8 to kind of patch some weird stuff through your guitar. So,
how big are they? Is it the same size as like a Space Echo, or is it the same size as the Roland Boutique synths?
It's probably a little bit bigger than the little boutique synths.
Right. Okay.
I thought. But yeah, and I'm really desperate to buy a VB2W. I had another go on one. I was like, this pedal just sounds awesome.
Yeah, really, really good. The little bit of time that I spent with it when we did that Periscope session, I was like, yeah, this is an awesome sounding pedal. It does like loads of those sounds that you're getting off like the Warped Vinyl and things like that, like the Chase Bliss stuff, which is like $250, but it's you know, how much are they, 169 quid or something?
I think they're probably going to be like 150 quid,
so about the same price then.
Well, no, because once you pay the import and shipping analog, and stuff
actually. I mean, that's the thing, isn't it, because the Chase Bliss pedals are digital. Are they digital? No,
analog, but they've got
but
digital
control,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. I really like the VB2W in a big way.
There's already so much pedal gear, like a lot more than anything else that we've seen this year. And it's interesting. I wonder if it's interesting to see how, like, you know, some of the bigger companies are gonna take this year on, whether Fender, for example, are going to go. I mean, obviously we know that we've got, you know, all of those new models that they announced at NAMM, the guitars and the amps, but when we get to Music Messer, are we going to find them bringing out a load of pedals to keep up with everyone else? Are we going to find...
Definitely not.
Well, no, maybe not with Fender, but you know, there was that Sur Boost.
Sur
Boost pedal announced a couple of weeks ago. You know, are Sur going to go more down that route, or are they going to... You know, it's very interesting that from a business point of view, obviously the growth is in this area as opposed to the guitar market or the amp market. So are we going to see companies like Fender, Gibson, Sur, PRS, you know, are we going to see companies like that go, okay, we need to tap into that market? Or are we going to see a sort of fragmentation of the industry? And are we going to see companies like Fender go, okay, well, the last time we tried to do some pedals with the competition pedals, they were absolutely pony. Let's try and just make another wicked guitar. But, you know, it's interesting to, like, where can it go? And where is there, you know, I'm just sort of thinking of it from a business point of view, as opposed to from our point of view as nerds. You know?
What they'd be better doing, because obviously what they were doing for those pedals is like, were they Mexican made or Chinese made? I can't remember.
They were like 30 quid.
Yeah, Chinese made. So they were just going to a factory and going,
yeah, of course, yeah,
can you build this? Whereas what they should do, and what they sort of did with Boss in the past when they did those team-up pedals,
yeah,
was like get a bit of credibility in the pedal market by kind of working with people. You know, if there was like a Wampler crossed Fender...
Like a twin preamp.
Yeah, exactly. Then, you know, that would give them a bit of kind of credence. But yeah, I just don't see it happening. I think the reason that people are into this stuff, and the reason we're talking about companies like Mad Professor or Cast Engineering or Chase Bliss or Magnetic Effects, is that they're not Fender or Gibson or...
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and that's why there's so much stuff. It's because it's quite a low barrier to entry for these manufacturers. They're not having to design a guitar, you know, design and build guitars
or
design and build massive amps. They're building things that you can build for less than $100 in your house.
Yeah.
and that you can ship all around the world without too much cost.
Without too much hassle.
And, you know, the sort of stuff we do is a great example. I wouldn't expect a manufacturer to ship us an amp for review or ship us a guitar for review, but they do. They can send us pedals because they're easily postable around the world. So, I don't know, really. You say the growth is in all this, the kind of pedals, really, but I don't think someone like Fender probably sees it like that. They're probably thinking, how can we open up, or, you know, like they did with the Squire stuff, they're thinking, how can we open up that £200 to £300 market? You know, they're probably not thinking, how can we open up the £200 to £300 pedal market?
Yeah, I suppose you're right.
Because that's not where the actual growth is. You know, the actual growth is
with the high ticket stuff.
People, well, and also people spending a bit more than Squire, or a bit more than, you know, I would say that kind of £300 to £800 market.
Yeah,
is probably,
yeah, that's fair.
How can they tap into that? And they've done it before with things like Classic Vibe, or they've done it with signature models. Yeah. You know, like reaching out to players to expand the market. I think that's the kind of strategies they use, rather than going down a boutique pedal route.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah.
Interesting to see, though. And, you know, talking about that kind of market being saturated, should we move on to the cast engineer and Casper delay, which is probably, if this doesn't win Gear of the Year this year, I think it was it announced this year? I think it was announced this year. I think it's technically allowed in. This pedal is unbelievable. And
how did you hear it?
I think I just saw a press release. I saw a news story of it being released. And it's so good. It looks like a kind of old style analog delay, just three knobs. It's delay, feedback, and level, I think. I can't remember. But it's three controls that you'd expect. But it's digital. It sounds so good. It's like perfectly kind of analog sounding where it needs to be, but it's like nice and crisp enough to so that, you know, if you want to do like slapbacky type stuff, it kind of doesn't turn to a mush. And it's got light up knobs. So, you know, what's better than that?
Yeah, I mean, I just happened to see your Periscope of it whilst you were demoing it, and it did sound very good. Obviously, I only heard it down the iPhone, but I'm not sure that it sounded better than a carbon copy.
I think it does.
Really?
Yeah. In fact,
I think we need to do a side by side shootout.
Yeah.
We should do like it. We should do like a hidden one. So get the get the Fender delay, get a carbon copy, get something like that.
DM2W.
Little delay shootout.
Yeah,
I think.
But no one sees, and then we'll just do it in some sort of weird competition where the one that everyone votes down the best, someone wins it or something. I don't know.
If only we had some sort of method to like really easily switch between, have like a load of pedals plugged in at once and really switch between them really quickly.
Yeah, if there was only some way we could do that.
But actually, this company, I was just having a look on the website, actually offer a load of Blues Junior modifications as well.
Oh,
so
do they? Okay.
I think they totally win. Wow, they do like a complete rehousing and hand build, and they do it in like a Flame Maple cabinet.
Nice.
With a 12-inch speaker, or a 210, or a 15. Imagine that, a Blues Junior with a 15-inch speaker.
A 115,
would sound amazing.
That would be wicked.
That would be really good. Well, they've sent us three pedals to try and demo. We've got the Casper Delay, the Texas Flood, which I guess is a kind of bluesy overdrive in a sort of Tube Screamery type vibe, and the Pulse Drive, which is a trem, which has got knobs that flash in time with the trem, which is wicked.
And it's
that's
optical,
cool. It's also got a boost.
Yes, it has.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's a cool little pedal. Yeah, I think it's optical trem, Matt.
See, that was the conversation we had the other day, was when you were telling me about them. You said it was optical.
I think it is, Matt. You might be able to confirm if you've got the website there.
It doesn't say.
Okay.
It doesn't say specifically. I suppose it might be based on an optical trem, perhaps.
Yeah.
I'm assuming they're saying it's based on a Fender trem circuit, which would be. So
yeah.
Sounded cool.
Well, that'd be a bias trem, wouldn't it, if it was in a Fender, because it's
the
valves.
Okay. It sounded cool anyway. So we're going to have some full demos and stuff of those. But yeah, the Casper delay, like, I think even off just hearing it down the iPhone, like a Periscope thing, a couple of guys in the Facebook group have already inquired about buying some.
Right.
So,
that's
cool.
Not available anywhere else but in the in America from like 8 dealers in America, and that's it.
Apparently they will. So one of the, I forget the guy's name, maybe Alex in the Facebook group has emailed them to ask if they'll ship to the UK, and apparently they will. So or they'll ship to other places as well. So yeah, I'm loving this pedal. Absolutely loving it. It's kind of how I took to the magnetic White Atom last year. I think this is definitely a strong contender for me. And there's, you know, we've got a lot of the year left to go, but I think this is going to be up there. I'll be surprised if it's not.
It's nice to just it's nice to find brands like this though, because you know, so often you know, on any of the groups you'd be like, oh, you know, suggest something sort of weird and wacky, and the same names come up, and you know, again and again, there are so many companies out there and so many small startup companies making like one or two pedals.
Yeah.
That, you know, you just literally, you know, I suppose they either take time to kind of build up, or you know, they just need someone famous to use one, and then everyone inquires about it, and then all of a sudden everyone wants one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Talking of small companies, Matty, you got a electronic rectangle for your birthday, so I hear.
I did, yeah. So a friend of mine like builds pedals part time, and he was just doing them as a bit of a project, and he's lent this one out to a few people, and then he was like, oh, I've got someone bringing it in for you, and you can keep it because it's your birthday. I was like, oh, thanks, man. And it was like absolutely amazing because it's built in this amazing box. He's had like all screen printed, he's had the box like custom designed, and he's done everything himself, wired it all himself, taken circuits, and the nice thing is it's taken circuits that are readily available online, like schematics online, and then like buying different components, because most of the circuits are like a fairly basic design, but there's certain, you know, op amps or certain chips or resistors or whatever you can change. So it does everything from an overdrive to like super extreme oscillating fuzz, and then they all work in series as well, which is quite cool. So they all go one into another, and it's basically, yeah, not like a tube screamer, but it's got a little bit more of the clean signal mixed in, so it's still like a tube screamer, but you know, you can hear a little bit more clean signal. Harmonic percolator, which is awesome, sounds obviously amazing, and then a supersonic fuzz gun, which is done by a company called Death by Audio, which is based in turn on a fuzz factory, so it's got that kind of wacky sort of Velcro self-oscillating fuzz. You can tune the pitch in and stuff like that as well. So, but it just goes to show that, you know, if you know what you're doing with a schematic, like you can take these circuits online and kind of make them into your own thing, and you know, spend a bit of time learning how they work, and then using that in turn, a lot like Reese did with Bigfoot, you know, learning how these circuits work, and then going, well, if I can do that with this particular thing, then I can design something from scratch and come up with what he does.
That's pretty much how everyone's gets started in that kind of business. Like, if you listen to the Wampler podcast, he kind of talks about taking things apart and learning how they worked. And I was listening to 60 Cycle Hum earlier, and they were talking to the guy from Earthquaker, who was saying that he basically learned how to build pedals because his DOD overdrive preamp was broken, and he just took it apart and started looking at the board and saw that there were like 7 components in there that you could easily get started making this sort of thing. So.
Yeah, it's funny actually, because I remember with Wampler, the guy obviously who started it, I remember probably when I started playing guitar, I was obviously really into like guitar pedals. He was just selling like clone kits,
yeah,
and like he was making his own kits and then just selling them, and then he was talking about modding pedals, and that was way before like Wampler became a thing, before he put his name to a pedal and then started selling it.
Yeah.
And it's just nuts, really. Like, now they're obviously considered like one of the biggest pedal manufacturers out there, yet he just started off by like being on like one of the very few forums on the internet and kind of just selling, you know, basically make your own kits, which eventually became all the Wampler pedals they do now.
Yeah. Have you had any feedback, or have you heard of anyone who's used to build your own clone stuff?
I think a few people have tried it that I've seen online, and I've been meaning to do it because I know how to solder, and I just want to give it a go.
I want to try and build something.
I think I've made the mistake though of buying a cheap soldering iron.
Yeah,
and I think it's one of those things where it's like, actually you need a half decent soldering iron to actually be able to do it. But the circuits themselves, I think once you understand the basics of how to read a circuit diagram, like, I think it becomes relatively easy.
Yeah.
I suppose the difficulty becomes problem shooting. Like, you can follow instructions and build something from start to finish, but then with a pedal, if it doesn't work, like, you've then got to learn how to backtrack
how to undo a load of solder and like, yeah, that's the thing that I'd worry about, definitely. So, definitely. But I want
to
get...
I just think, like, to be able to build amps would just be like one of those things that would be amazing. Yeah. Like, imagine being able to like build, like, take, you know, a Blues Junior or something and then like totally modify it into your own thing.
Yeah, definitely. I think we should maybe make it a feature on the site. Let's all do a build your own clone and see how we get on.
I was going to say build your own amp. We'll all probably end up...
Yeah, burn your own house down, I think will be actually what it is. Shall we dive in some news?
News.
Is that it? Is that your attempt at the news? News.
News.
Okay, good. So only one bit this week.
Sounds like a car going really fast.
News.
News.
Korg have announced a new tuner, the Pitch Black Mini. I think it's not very surprising that this happened. Matt, what are the deets?
It's really small. And the funniest thing about it is it has... Well, actually, one of the best things about it is battery operated, which I think is very good, because most of those mini tuners aren't.
Yeah, is it 9 volt?
It's 9 volt, yeah. So it works on a little 9 volt battery.
It can't be that small then.
It sits, rather than flat, I suppose it sits on the other edge. But it... I can't really describe how you put it in, but it does definitely look like fitting. Probably quite tall, though. So you could probably have it the same width as, like, a Polytune Mini, for example, but it's probably just slightly taller, which actually would probably have its advantage.
Okay.
But it also comes with little stabilizer legs that poke out the side, so it stops it from wiggling from one side or the other.
Oh, so you can use it not on a pedal board, basically. You don't need to use a heap of Velcro. It will just work on a stage.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, so when it's on the floor, it will just has these little legs that pop out.
Good to see someone else.
I mean, apart from that, I mean, it's, you know, a nice big LED readout. It's got that kind of the same sort of familiar readout that all the other Korg tuners have. Tunes to the same sort of accuracy as a lot of the other ones. True bypass. You know, it's just following on from what they've already done and just made it into a small pedal format, really.
Good to see someone else having a crack at that, because obviously it's, you know, the I guess the TC Polytune Mini has kind of dominated that space for a long time. So,
yeah.
And I always liked the Korg stuff. The Pitch Black, I thought, was kind of always a nice little alternative. I mean, I don't think it's as good as a TU3, which I think is the best tuner of all time. But
TU3?
Yeah, well, you know, TU2 or TU3, up to you. I prefer the TU2, actually.
Retro.
TU1000, that's what you need.
Yeah.
It's the biggest floor tuner.
All about the TU1000. I actually use a Korg DTR1000, which is...
You did have one of those, yeah.
Do you have that in your Mark Bass rack?
I did, indeed. Good times. You could get the 2000, where I think the only difference was that it had a light underneath that you could have it shine down on the rest of your rack.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I like it.
Good times. Now, I did say this week would be a question spectacular, because we have not done many questions over the last few weeks because there's been so much news and other nonsense to chat about. So should we dive in some questions?
Questions.
I'm back again.
Came back again.
Okay,
yeah,
good,
yeah.
Good. I like it.
It was like... like a velodrome.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
Question.
Okay, good. Good. I'm into it. Ben says, I'm looking to upgrade my pedal board, and the main upcoming purchase would be an ESA and either the DD500 or the Timeline. I've tried both, and both are excellent. However, a 20-minute demo in a busy shop won't let me get the most out of either. So which would you suggest? I want MIDI control, I want presets, etc. I play grown-up bearded prog, i.e. Stephen Wilson, Flying Colours, Beardfish, etc. Now, I've never heard of Beardfish. But if someone said my band is called Beardfish, I would probably have guessed that it's grown-up beardy prog. I would say that's definitely what that name suggests.
Right.
So, I guess the question is, so he wants to get an ESA and wants to use the MIDI capabilities and things like that. He's dead set on the ESA, but he's thinking DD500 or Timeline. Now, I know we've kind of flip-flopped back and forth on these for, well, since the DD500 came out, but what's your current thinking, Matt?
I think I'm always going to be a little bit biased because I've had a Timeline now for like 2.5 years. I think it's the longest I've owned a single pedal ever in the last 14 years.
By your Big Muff, your Russian Big Muff.
I probably have had that longer than I've had the Timeline. Longest pedal. I don't think I'd ever get rid of it because it just does everything that you'd need it to do. And probably more, to be honest, more that I'd that I'm not using it for. But for me, I prefer the analog sounds on it and the tape sounds. The DD500 is great for more of the digital sounds and some more of the wackier stuff. But there's been a lot on the forums recently. I know someone on the Guitar Nerds group mentioned it, and I saw someone else talking about it, about the stereo spread if you're running it in with two amps, that the DD500 doesn't sound like as wide as the timeline. So I don't know, if you're doing a lot of stereo stuff, maybe that would be a case of trying to get them and use them in your own rigs and see what you think. But for me, the timeline, it does all the more vintage delays like so much better. But if it's not, if that's not what you're after, then maybe the DD500 would be a better option.
Is it not adjustable, the stereo width?
I think it is to a point, but then I think people are saying that it's still not as good as the timeline.
Okay. That's a pretty niche criticism, though, I would say.
Yeah.
You know,
the one thing that I liked on the DD500 was the fact that where you'd normally have a tap tempo, which is what you've got on the timeline, you can actually set that to do anything that you want, which I thought was quite a cool feature. But then once, if you're using an ESA, once you've hooked a timeline up to MIDI, you can set
you can
any
do
button
that,
to do anything.
Anyway,
so
yeah,
it's kind of like that becomes almost irrelevant, really. So judging it purely on just the sounds, for me, I still prefer the timeline.
One question that I would ask about this: does the DD500 have that? And I forget the name of it now. I wanted to say multi overtone, but I don't mean that. I mean, what was the delay?
Terra Echo.
The Terra Echo.
Does it have the Terra Echo built
in? The one that has like the laser gun sound in the background. Yes, it does.
Okay.
Which is very, very cool. That is an awesome, awesome algorithm.
I'm just trying to think like what might be in there that isn't in the timeline, and I really like
that. Is probably one that's one of them.
The big thing about it was because I remember when I tried the DD500 for the first time. Now I realise that I'm probably not the sort of person that should be critiquing the two highest
delay
spec
pedals.
Delay pedals on the market at the moment. But, you know, when I did it, I just thought that the DD500 sounded a little bit too... like you, I prefer, like, vintage sounds, especially with delay. And I thought that it sounded a little bit too crisp. But you said, at the time, you said that it was a higher bit rate and it was a higher quality... The delay was a higher quality.
It's got a slightly, I think it's the processor in it actually works. It's 32-bit and 96 kilohertz processing,
right,
which is slightly more than the timeline. So, you know, that's another thing to worth bear in mind. And actually, some of the algorithms on there are sounds that you won't be able to get from a timeline. But once again, that's where the DD500 comes in, is if you're after kind of more of those sort of special effects and things like that, then actually, you know, I almost think the DD500 is far superior, where I tend to use the timeline much more for kind of tape echoes and analog sounds rather than things like shimmer, you know, because I use the H9 for that, and I think the H9 covers a wider range of algorithms.
Yeah.
So we think for maybe a more grown-up beardy prog band in the style of Beardfish, maybe the DD500 is the way to go.
Yeah, potentially. I don't know. I don't listen to enough beardy grown-up prog.
Okay. What about, how about in terms of compatibility with MIDI and, like, hooking up to the ESA and that kind of more... technical side of things, I guess, like apart from the sound, like in terms of ease of use and just the general setup?
I think they're probably both equally the same, because once you've hooked it into MIDI, I think everything on it is controllable. You know, if you hooked up VNS, I think everything is controllable via MIDI, so it's fairly easy to use. I suppose the only advantage, if you weren't using an ES8 with the DD500, you've got USB. And I can't remember if you can hook it up to Tone Central or not, and then you can download like other presets, or you can edit them that way, which is quite a cool feature if you're using it for recording.
We don't know if it can do that. I can't remember off the top of my head if it
can. I can't remember, because I think a lot of the things now have got USB and they do allow you to do that. But I think once you go in via MIDI, obviously you're kind of... open up to anything. Yeah, actually, USB simply connects your computer for patch backup, and MIDI opens up to many additional controls. So actually, yeah, it's probably just backing up parameters,
right?
Which you can do on the timeline, but it's much more complicated to do on the timeline.
Okay.
Because you have to hook it up via MIDI to an interface, and then it uses some sort of really weird bit of software that you have to download straight from the Strymon website. But I think at the end of the day, both are very, very good. I suppose really it's kind of a case of trying to hook it up with your own rig and seeing how you get on with it.
Yeah, definitely.
So I think even after 2 years, I'm probably now, or even after, you know, I think it took me a good year to kind of really stick with it. I think, to be honest, if I tend to have a pedal for probably more than a year or a year and a half, I'll probably tend to keep it, because I know that
you know
point
it's a good one.
And I think it's the same with the ES8. I've had the ES8 for quite a while now, and it's kind of like I finally now get everything that you can do with it, and it sort of makes so much more sense to me.
Yeah.
Whereas if I got a DD500, I think even though it sound great when I plugged it in, I'd be like, oh yeah, but I knew how to do everything with the timeline, so you can manipulate it.
Definitely. Mark, not me, says, how many Les Pauls do I need? Now, this is obviously a fairly flippant question, but what I was thinking is, from the current range of Les Pauls, is there a Les Paul that basically does everything?
I suppose the new Les Paul standard sort of does everything.
Okay, in what way?
In coil taps, phase, straight to output jack. And the 2016 high performance, I suppose, if you bought the high performance model, has got all this crazy internal switching, which I saw the other day. I finally had a go on some of these high performance guitars, and they all come with like solderless contacts for changing pickups. So even if you want to put your own pickups in, you don't have to take the circuit board out or anything like that. You can just pop the wires in these little sockets, and then you can connect your own pickups.
Oh, really?
Up as well.
What, like a hi-fi system?
Yeah.
Oh, right, wow.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, because you know on the old, like, my old, I think my SGs might be it. I can't remember if they started putting a circuit board in, so everything was mounted to a circuit board.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to put pickups in, you had to take the whole circuit board out and put four new pots in, because you couldn't disconnect the pots because they were actually soldered onto the board.
So if you were going to put in third-party pickups, so like Bare Knuckle or something, you would basically have to strip all the electronics out of the guitar.
Yeah, and put a whole new set of electronics in. But with these, they've got these quick connectors. So you unplug the pickup and then you plug this thing in and it works like an interim socket, and then you can just plug the normal wires in.
Wow. So you don't need solder at all to install new pickups?
No.
That's pretty impressive.
It's the same as the quick connect system
on an EMG set. It's exactly... EMGs. Yeah. That's very interesting.
Because, you know, Seymour Duncan have done something similar for a while, haven't they, with that little set that you can buy, and it's like a little thing that sits inside your guitar, and then you just basically screw the terminals in. So you can then kind of do a load of different random switching for switching stuff in and out quickly. So I suppose they've just taken the same idea. But then, it's got... And I haven't looked into it fully, but the high performance have got all this extra switching for changing, like, the filter inside and how the tone pots work and stuff like that.
So how do you control that then?
There's like four little
so you can't control it on the fly, is what I mean.
You can't control it on the fly unless you were crazy to drill five holes in the front of your Les Paul stand.
Dip switches,
You know that will see at least one of those at some point. And just
tangent.
Five mini switches.
None of the people in any of those bands play Les Pauls, are they?
No, they're all tellies. Yeah. So so basically, that was the answer that I wanted, really. How many Les Pauls do you need? Well, I mean, one.
No, that's not
true. One.
The only thing you won't get out of that is P90s.
Well, that's also not entirely accurate.
Okay.
I mean, depending on... If you're talking about, you know, making it work... because when you're on now which way around is it, because you can with the pin when you go for the pull up the tone control, which goes straight to output jack on one of those Les Paul standards, if you also then pull up the bridge pickup volume control, that splits that into a single coil.
Yes.
Because the output jack bypasses everything except for
that control.
The up-down control. So you can go to a single coil when you're straight to output jack to give you a, like, P90 Les Paul Junior style.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Does it sound like a P90 pickup, though, or does it sound like a Strat pickup?
I don't think it sounds like a Strat pickup. I think it probably sounds a bit more like a P90. Okay. But it's, you know, I mean, it definitely doesn't sound like...
I was going to say, that's why I'm surprised they never kept the chameleon tone. Those bizarre pickups from, like, a few years ago that had, like, all that... Do you remember when you, like, pushed the tone knob in and then, like, all the switches lit up?
It was like guitar modelling straight from a humbucker, wasn't it? There was no, like, head pickup or anything needed.
So there was no digital modelling. It was all analogue modelling because everything, it changed the way the pickup was wired.
Yeah. So, like, see, that's what I was going to say. I was wondering if you could do anything like that with this, you know, because essentially what you could do is you could put, like, I mean, what you're suggesting with the 2016... high performance is really not that dissimilar to having, like, a Veritone controller, like from like a 137 or a 175 or something like that, you know.
It's funny, really. I was having a conversation with someone the other day about Line 6, about the Variacs, and I was like, is there something, like, in your mind, though, that tells you, if you're a guitar player, that when you're looking at a P90 and you play it, you go, that's a P90? Whereas if you've got a Variax and you go, that's a P90 model. And I know it's a digital model, but it's just like, no matter what, you're going to be like, still not a P90.
Yeah.
Yeah, completely. There's so many other things at play as well as the actual sound.
That's always the thing, isn't it? The only thing you could do, I suppose, would be... put one of those Seymour Duncan Fat Cats. Is it the Fat Cat? There's a humbucker and the P90.
Cat. Yeah, exactly.
And then you could buy one of those
P-rails?
P-rails, that's it. Because then you could also buy what do they call it? The triple shot ring, which has got those three little switches in.
Yeah.
That then allow you to change how it's wired.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah. It's the ultimate utility Les Paul.
I mean, the thing is, I had a Strat once that I ended up putting, like, a hot rails in, and then two hot rails, and then it had, like, coil taps for each, and then it had, like, a neck bridge switch and, like, a phase inversion. I think I only ever used the bridge with everything turned up full. This guitar is actually pointless.
Yeah, completely.
Because you have all that on there, and then you're like, there's still only one sound that sounds the best, so...
I had a band practice at the weekend, and I played a guitar that was just a USA Strat, but with a JB Junior in the bridge, and it sounded so good. And now I kind of want to get a Strat, but we should talk about this next week because I've been doing some research. I've been seeing what's out there. Anyway, Wilson says, a friend of mine is looking at a Harley Benton TE90 Thinline-esque guitar. Anyone had any experiences they want to share? Would be a gigging guitar. I think our feedback is probably don't go down the Harley Benton route.
Aren't they the Toman own brand?
They are,
if I remember right.
Indeed.
They're just, I mean, it's like anything these days. I mean, you can take a design to a factory and they will just build it for you.
Yeah.
Whereas if you take it to somewhere like, you know, World Guitars in, is it Indonesia where they build the PRSs?
Korea.
Korea. And they're actually like a dedicated guitar factory.
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, somewhere like Faith, where, you know, where they build Faith guitars, where they actually set up a factory and then train all the luthiers. You're still getting a fantastic guitar for not a lot of money, but you're getting something that's built by people who know what they're doing. Well, I'm not saying that they don't know what they're doing in some of these cheaper factories, but it's just like, you know, they've got to cut corners
somewhere. Yeah.
I mean, how much is it?
I was going to say my advice. I mean, there's definitely, for not a lot of money, there's a really good thin line tele alternative.
Yeah, I mean the TE90 is... It isn't really, I mean, because the TE90 is the P90, it's like the Jim Adkins.
Well, I assume this guitar is the Harley Benton TE90.
Yeah, which will be the Jim Adkins version.
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, that's why there's the 90 in it, because it's got P90s.
Yeah, probably.
Because that's what, because the Fender, because that, that the Jim Adkins telly isn't really, I mean, it sort of is a telly, but it's not really a telly. It's based on the TE90, the Fender TE90, which they didn't produce very many of, but it's a through neck thin line with P90s.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And then that's what they did. That's what they made the Jim Adkins out of. So this will be something along those lines. So, yes, you can buy a Squire thin line telly for not a huge amount of money. I mean, they're still £350, but you know, for not a huge amount more, you'd be able to get a Jim Adkins, and that guitar is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah,
they're such great guitars. But you know, I don't know how much the Harley Benton is. You know, I guess it's what we would say is the same as what we would say about anything like this, like. If what you want is something that sounds like a TE90 and plays like a TE90, then, you know, you can buy a cheaper version, but you've got to be willing to accept the fact that it won't sound as good.
And
it won't feel as good.
He does say it's going to be a gigging guitar, so I think, you know...
It's bizarre, because, yeah, it is basically the same thing strung through, but it's got, like, a quilt maple top.
Okay.
It's very weird.
Oh, really?
£139.
Oh my word! I mean,
that is cheap.
I mean, well, in that case, it's difficult. I mean, you just never know. Is the short answer? I mean,
I think that's the point, isn't it?
You don't... like £139 is not enough money for a guitar. Really, you know, without it's difficult because you know you don't want to sound like you're being snobby about it. But £139 for some, I mean, I'm sure it will see you through for 6 months to a year,
sure,
but it's not going to last very long.
No,
you know? There's a reason why 50s and 60s Fenders and Gibsons go for the money that they do, and it's because they're incredible guitars, and they, you know, apart from anything, they're still here.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? Like, they're still here,
yeah.
And in 50 years, a Harley Benton TE90 probably won't be.
No, I mean, I would say that if it's specifically a telly-shaped guitar that he wants and he likes the kind of look of the F-hole and stuff, then the Squire classic vibe, or is it vintage modern? There's two, isn't there? There's a vintage modern and
modified,
a classic vibe.
Vintage modified. There's a classic vibe thin line.
The classic vibe one
is really good.
Which
you can get in like a walnut effect.
Yeah, so good.
That's a great guitar. And then there's a vintage modified one, which is a bit cheaper, which comes in black. And that is just, that is really, I mean, they're both great guitars. And, you know, would you be able to route that out and put a P90 in there? Probably not, because it's so thin already.
But what you could do is put something like a JB Jr. There's a JB Jr. for telly, right? Yeah. You could put something like that in. You could have fun playing around with like nicer pickups and
but
things like that.
The thing is what you've done there is you've gone from spending £139 on a guitar to spending £300 and then buying another pickup.
Sure.
You know, and it's, you know, if that's, it is very difficult because the guitar world, but you know, being involved in the sort of the back end side of things.
Speak for yourself.
We've seen a lot of, you know, you see cheap stuff come back and you see stuff, you see stuff break easily when it's cheap. You know, you do see a higher proportion of cheap stuff going wrong earlier.
Yeah.
And so if you can spend the extra money and go for something that isn't 139 quid, I definitely think it's worth doing. But if you can't do that, just be aware of the fact that it's not a huge amount of money for what it is, and it's probably not going to last a huge amount of time.
I think the thing is, at the end of the day, is it's like, if it turns up working and you're just playing at home, it's probably going to last ages. But I always think the thing with those cheaper guitars is they're not finished to the same sort of quality. So you've got things like, you know, fret edges, you know, maybe it's not, some of the frets aren't finished and polished nicely. You know, maybe it's not had a half decent setup. And sometimes those cheaper guitars, you can do all of that. And then, you know, it does make a big difference. But, you know, do you want to buy a guitar that you might have to spend 50 to 100 quid on when you've then spent 200, 300 quid and you could just buy something new for 300 quid you know is going to come straight out of the factory, like, playing amazingly?
It's like that Aria Mosrite copy that I've got. Like, it's just not that fun to play.
No.
It's just not nice. It's not a nice guitar. It's kind of okay. And it was like 150 quid, I think they go out for.
Yeah.
It's just not a nice guitar to play. I don't enjoy playing it. Whereas I pick up the Les Paul that I've got, and even though at the moment it's not sounding the best, needs some work doing to it, like, it's a really nice guitar to play. And that's the difference between something at 150 quid and, I mean, that was, or that, or the equivalent was kind of 400 to 500 quid.
Yeah.
That's the difference. It's like you get a guitar that's actually nice to play.
Yeah.
So, but even jumping up to the Squire, like, that classic vibe thin line is awesome.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, they're what?
329? 350,
I think,
probably, something like that.
Joe says, there are sections in songs where I have to switch between a heavy section and a clean, jangly section. I'd like to be able to do this without the harshness of really sudden changes in tone slash volume. It's very easy in a studio, but is there a way to do this when you're the only guitarist and playing live? At the moment, I'm tap dancing on an overdrive, a channel switcher, and a reverb pedal in order to make my last distorted chord ring continue into the cleaner parts. I've also tried with a volume pedal, but I can't make this work right either. I'm looking for a distortion pedal that holds what you play last and has an adjustable speed fading level control, if you see what I mean. Does such a thing exist, or would it be a terrible idea? If it does exist, where might I find it, and what other options are available for me to do the same job? Matt Knight.
Wow.
Because I started off and I was like, oh, it just sounds like he wants like a Boss line selector so he can just go between a clean sound and a distorted sound without switching on three pedals. But that's not what he wants. He wants to actually physically fade between two different pedals. There is actually Gig Rig, who make the G2 switching system and various other things, do a box, a pedal called the Wet Box, which basically is a dual looper. So you go guitar in and then out into your amp, and then there's an A loop and a B loop. So, for example, you put a distortion in A and a delay in B. You then plug an expression pedal in. It'll allow you to then blend in the second amount of the other loop. So you could do it that way. So you could have a distortion pedal on all the time, and then you fade the expression pedal back and it will fade the second loop out.
So the loop, so both loops are on all the time. And you've just got the option to basically bring one in or out again. Okay. That's a really interesting way of doing things. I've not heard of anybody else do anything like that before.
Yeah, let me have a look. Because if I remember rightly, yeah, so you've basically got input and then output, and then you've got two sends, or you've got input A, and then send A. I think actually what it is it's your normal guitar in to output, and then there's a second loop which you use the expression pedal to fade between.
Yeah.
So you can use it as a parallel mixer, so both at zero, and then you can fade them both in. Or you can use an A-B mixer to go between, say, two different types of effects.
Yeah.
You can use it for effects loops as well, apparently. So yeah, that's the one thing I try, because I reckon that would probably be the simplest way of doing it. So that's the Gig Rig Wet Box.
Okay. I was just thinking about something like the Boss ES5, like a smaller looping solution that would allow him to plug all his pedals in, set up some presets, Will that allow you to blend between? Can you plug an expression in and blend between presets?
I've tried, and because what I tried to do was set up an expression pedal on the ES8 where when you push the expression pedal forward, it then blended in another loop or switched on another effect, for example. The problem is because it works on like current, there's an audible electrical click when you fade another pedal in, because there's obviously a relay in there, so it's obviously switching in a relay on that pedal. And because you're doing it on a expression pedal, it picks it up, so you end up getting this quite loud audible click as you fade in. What you could do would be use the carryover feature. Well, actually, you could use the carryover feature, which means that you engage tell a loop to carry over like delay, for example, and then when you switch to another preset, that loop which you've now turned off will still carry on for a set amount of time.
Okay.
And you can set up parallel loops, so you can have a delay and a distortion running in parallel rather than in series. So if you're using two amps, you get clean sound from one side and dry sound from the other.
Sure.
Or you get more clean sound than distorted sound, for example. But it still wouldn't allow you to, say, for example, fade out the distortion. There's also, I think, Bright Onion pedals, which we've talked about before, make something called the Trails switcher.
Great noise.
Yeah. Oh, I was thinking... my thinking.
It's a great sound. Noise. I mean, no one on the podcast is going to get this, but the accompanying face was amazing.
Especially over Skype. It was
lovely.
Absolutely awesome.
Froze on that face.
Yeah, so they do something called the Trails switcher, which you put your delay in, it turns an analog delay or anything true bypass to then like buffered. So it's got a buffer built into it. So, for example, with a delay like an AD9, whereas you step on it, it turns off. You run this pedal, you run it in the loop of this pedal, and it works like a one loop switcher. But because it's buffered, it keeps the delay trails going without cutting off the wet signal, but it cuts off the dry signal.
That's really cool.
So that might potentially work, but it's not working on the distorted side of things, only on the clean side of things.
Yeah. Mm. So
I think the wet box is the one that would definitely do it, because then you can physically fade in and out with an expression pedal.
Do we know how much the wet box is?
$157, so it's not cheap, but it is obviously like super high quality.
Yeah,
I think Exotic do. In fact, actually, Pigtronics do the Keymaster, which would do a similar thing as well.
Okay, again, not cheap though. They're over £200.
The problem is with anything, when you come up with an idea like this for guitars, the solution is never cheap.
No. Probably because it's not a solution that a lot of people need, so that's driving up the price.
I had a weird one the other day. Someone wanted to use a stereo setup but with two effects loops, and I was like, I don't think that's possible, because you can't, if you run one effects loop into the other, if you chain effects loops, you're effectively cutting out the preamp of the second amp.
Yeah.
So I was like, you need a box that basically takes guitar in, sends stereo out into two amps, but then also sends two feeds to effects loops. And I was like, I wonder if there's someone who does it and actually radial make a box.
Of course they do.
But it's like £300, but they're like, well, you know, if you really need that solution.
That's what we didn't we talk really about that?
Was it the amp driver?
No, the shotgun.
The shotgun amp driver. Was that...
I don't know. Did we talk about that?
We talked about it last week.
Yeah,
when you weren't here.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's probably what you're talking about. It basically sends four parallel signals out. That's probably it. Could be that one. Anyway, Dylan says, anyone have any suggestions on build your own guitar kits? I found a decent looking option for a good sale price, but have no experience in that area. What do we recommend for build your own stuff? I've not really. It's not something I've delved in. Like. Not something that I've kind of researched for a long time. Warmoth, I think, was always my kind of go-to.
It's so expensive.
It is now. Used to be quite affordable,
didn't
it? It
used to be super cheap. Yeah. And then I think they realised that actually they've probably got a good thing going here. And then. But I mean, the thing is, it's like, I really like Warmoth. I think what you can do in terms of picking different things is amazing. And I think some of the guitars I've seen have been from anything from really cool to super wacky, because I think sometimes when you're given the choice, people go, yeah man, I'll have like a Babinga body, and then I'll pick my own like quadruple A flame quilt top, and it's like, and then you get this thing and this body's cost you 900 quid. And I think ultimately the only problem with that is the guitar is effectively worthless. Like, yeah. Once you've put the guitar as a whole is worth less than the parts individually, I think, which is always the thing that kind of people don't tend to get with that sort of thing. And also, if you're going to do it, I think buying from Warmoth, at least you know the neck's going to be finished and like all the frets are going to be done. Mm-hmm. There's some great guitar kits out there that cost a couple of hundred quid, but you need to have some sort of skill in terms of being able to set up a guitar and maybe do fret work and things like that.
And the finishing as well. Like Warmoth stuff, you know that if you go for a finished body, it's going to be a top-notch finish. If you go for a guitar kit that's 200 quid, the finish that you get on it is probably not going to be very nice at all. Like, the actual body itself is probably going to look pretty horrible.
I mean, most of the luthiers I know couldn't finish a guitar body for...
for toffee.
200 quid, do you know what I mean? Okay.
Yeah, yeah, completely. I remember getting... I was thinking about getting a P-Bass body specced up in Fuchsia Sparkle, and... like, I took it to, or I spoke to a local luthier about it, and he was like, 350 quid, something like that, for a metallic flake.
It's because the guns think they have to use for different finishes, like flakes, obviously have to have like a different nozzle, and then obviously it's the paint that's expensive. Yeah. So I think that ultimately, yeah, Warmoth is expensive, but that's the way you're going to do it if you kind of got a crazy spec. If you know what you're doing and you just want to build something cheap and you just want to put a guitar together, then actually some of the cheap kits you can buy on eBay are pretty good.
Yeah, definitely. Don't expect it to be worth anything, I think, is always the key thing talk about build your owns. Like, I saw a guy on a forum today who posted a question that was just, if a guitar is £900 new or it costs £900 to build, what's it worth secondhand? And it's like, that's such an open question, because if it was a USA Strat that cost 900 quid, it's probably worth 600 quid.
Yeah.
But if it's something that you spent 900 quid on from Warmoth, it's probably worth £100.
I think actually nowadays you've got a better chance of selling something for a more reasonable payback.
Sure,
because you've got like, there are so many Facebook forums out there, and you know you've got access to the other nerds like you,
sure,
you know, who can appreciate something for what it is and for what it is worth. Whereas, you know, even I, you know, I know a lot about guitars. It's not worth anything to me.
No,
because I sort of.
You want a Fender or you want a Gibson, like, you can't judge what that person's craft
absolutely. And, you know, I know that we get a lot of slack, and I think possibly me more than the rest of everyone here for being very sort of, you know, Fender and Gibson orientated, but you do know what you're going to get.
Yeah,
you know,
completely.
Consistency, you know?
Definitely.
I think it's difficult, isn't it? Because there's some great boutique companies out there and builders, but you give someone the choice between that and a Gibson in terms of secondhand, you know, the boutique one that's one person spent 100 hours on is just not going to be the same.
No.
And I know, you know, I always use the example of the guitar that I bought from eBay that was a Warmoth parts guitar that I paid, I think, 300 quid for from a guy, had a really expensive pickup in it, had a neck from Warmoth that was, you know, a couple of hundred quid, and I ended up selling the neck for almost as much money as I paid for the whole guitar.
Of course, yeah. Like you say, the parts are almost worth more than the guitar when it's put together, because there is that thing of like, okay, what's this person done to this guitar? Mm-hmm. Like, at least if it's just a neck, you kind of know it's just a Warmoth neck. You know, if you're buying a parts caster, it's like, oh, got all these bits. Anyway, let's do maybe a couple more questions. This one is also a bit about building. Mark says, I made a mistake a few years back and put my money into a Kickstarter campaign for a hand-built Telly-style guitar. After super long delays, I've basically been sent a part-painted instrument that's not even been wired up. It's a shame, as the neck and body are both nice pieces of lumber, so scope for a bit of a project. At this point, everything is on the table. I have two traditional pickup tellies, so I'm open to other options. My first thought would be a tribute guitar of sorts, a Muddy Waters or Andy Summers, maybe. But I'd like to hear some off-the-wall ideas that I could maybe go with. What would you build, Japs, if you were given a nice telly neck, nice telly body? You already had a traditional telly. What would you go for?
Is there anything else to build but an Esquire?
Are you getting anything more out of an Esquire, though, than you would out of...
No, you're getting less.
Well, of course. But then why do they still exist?
It's funny, isn't it? Like, I don't know. Because obviously I've got the Baja, which I put the TV Jones in the neck, and it's like that, you know, it's a cool-sounding guitar.
And it's ruined it.
But, you know, just at the end of the day, like, building an Esquire, they're the best.
Okay. Well, let's assume.
I mean, that's what I do. Or build a stealth Esquire. So put a super high powered pickup under the scratch plate. Then people like Jay would still go, cool Esquire. And you'd be like, ha, that's what you think.
Maybe that's where you've actually got a DiMarzio cool super distortion. Yeah.
I think this is
you've
what should
be. Super cool EMG under the plate that you can just whack in when you really want.
All I'm saying is Fernandez Sustainiac underneath the pit guard. You're onto a winner. As many dip switches as you can, like tiny little micro switches.
Was there an Esquire? Do I remember seeing a Fender at one point, and it was actually a Fender-built instrument that had no pickup, but it looked like a telly, and then all it had was actually a piezo.
Yes.
The Acoustasonic Telecaster?
There was two, Acoustasonic Telly and the Telecoustic, which was an acoustic guitar. But
no, the Telecoustic, was an acoustic guitar, because they also did a Strat-acoustic.
Yeah.
The Acoustasonic... which I believe only came in Olympic white.
Oh god, that's such an awful guitar.
They weren't very good, and they were very expensive as well. They were
terrible,
really, really expensive.
You were paying more to have no pickups. Awful.
Yeah.
Awful. I tell you what, I did see actually some of the actual Fender Custom Shop Stealth Esquires made by the fella who died.
John English.
One of those is up for sale at the moment on the Fretboard forum, I think. And it was going for $3,500, which like doesn't seem like enough.
Way more than that usually.
And that's the price of a secondhand master built. You know, let alone a secondhand master built that has that amount of limited numbers and heritage, but also presumably limited appeal,
I found an old one on Reverb from about 2 years ago. It went for £6,200.
I think it's a bit of a bargain for someone to snap up there. Definitely.
Yeah, I wish I had $3,000, because I'd just buy it and sell it straight away.
Let's do one more quick question. We never actually decided what we would build. So Matt, you're saying Stealth Esquire. Jay, what are you saying?
I, as we discussed a couple of weeks ago, I've got a deposit down now on a offset Telecaster.
Bear in mind, he's got a telly body.
I've got a deposit down on an offset Telecaster, which is, as we all know, a Telemaster. I think maybe what you should do is the jazz
caster.
So put like jazz master pickups.
Yep.
And maybe a jazz master trem. On a Telecaster body. Go the other way.
Okay.
Jazzcaster.
I'm going to say, because I recently saw...
Also really don't do that, because that will be rubbish. Just make another cool telly.
I recently saw a Stratasonic for sale, which was a mahogany-bodied Strat with two Dynasonics in it. And I think, basically, you should build that. You're going to have to dig quite deep into the body, but two Dynasonic pickups in there.
That's the Harrison guitar, isn't it?
The kind of like Guildy looking pickups.
Yeah, but that's what George Harrison. Oh no, he didn't, did he?
What are you talking about?
George Harrison.
Yeah.
Of the Beatles.
Yeah.
He had a Rosewood Telecaster.
Yeah.
Sorry, it's been a long
time. He did play, I mean, the George Harrison Gretsch guitar has got a kind of Dinosonic style.
Yeah, and that's made of mahogany. That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, no, they did a weird thing called the Stratasonic, which is weird. It was like those...
Oh, a Strat, not a Tele. Oh,
yeah,
sorry,
exactly.
I've got to be honest with you, Mark, I just wasn't listening to you.
Good, thanks very much. and yeah, so that's what you should build. A Tele with two Dinosonics in it. I think that is the way
Can you even buy Dinosonics?
I don't know. Get them off eBay or
something. I don't know if you can, because then, obviously you can buy... TV Jones pickups, which are Gretsch style, but they're not Gretsch pickups.
No.
But can you buy...
Probably, somewhere.
Dinosonics?
Just get some of those. Anyway.
Okay.
we're up at time, gentlemen. This is it's the end of the podcast.
The end of the podcast as we know it.
Indeed, that's not the tune of that song. but we've got a whole load more because we asked for loads and loads of questions. So we'll answer some more in this week's Patreon episode over at patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $5 a month, you can get an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds content every week. Oh my god. What's that thing that's been going around the internet at the moment with the damn Daniel?
Damn Daniel, have you not seen it?
I know, I just keep seeing
so stupid.
Whenever anyone posts anything on the internet now, it just has damn Daniel before it.
It's just like, it's just really stupid. It's just this one kid. I watched the whole thing and like they went on Ellen. Like,
okay.
It's been mental. It's had like 60 million views. That's like almost as many years as it's been since there were dinosaurs on the earth. But there was, so basically, it's just a kid just admiring his friend's style, just being like, oh, damn, Daniel, you're looking great today. And he just filmed himself doing that as a Snapchat story for like 7 days in a row. And people were like, oh, this is great. Keep doing it. And then someone stretched it all together. And it went on to made itself onto YouTube. And yeah, they went on Ellen. And Vans then gave Daniel a lifetime supply of Vans.
Damn, Daniel. That's
bonkers.
Good. Well,
the internet is wicked.
The internet is wicked. And do you know what? If you go to patreon.com /guitar nerds,
yeah.
You put down $10 a month.
Yeah.
That gives you access to not only an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds content every week, but you get to have your name read out.
You do.
At the end of every bloody damn Daniel episode
it's
of
true.
Guitar Nerds.
And this time, because Joe Branton isn't here, I'm going to read their names out and people are actually going to hear who it is that we have to thank, especially for being an executive producer and helping us executively produce this.
It's the end of the pod as we know it.
Andy McKenzie.
It's the end
Joe
of the
Depto.
Pod as we know it.
Eric Seary.
It's the end
Paul
of the
Corrigan.
Pod as we know it.
Jack Godfrey.
It's the end
Dale
of the
Rasko.
Pod as we know it.
Jack Conroy.
It's the end
Will
of the
Claire.
Pod as we know it.
Chris Wilson.
It's the end
Scott
of
O'Brien.
Pod as we know it.
Matt Quine.
It's the end
Fletch Fletcher,
as we know it.
Phil Thompson,
it's the end.
Laurie Anstis,
as we know it.
Moo Gravett,
it's the end.
Colin
of the
Anderson,
as we know it.
Cha cha cha.
Matt, you look so bloody bored.
I was actually, you know, usually when it happens, I'm like, do you know what? I'll just spend that glorious 1-2 minutes looking at really expensive guitars, and I thought I'll just go to Wildwood, you know, because they've got like 300 custom shop Les Pauls in stock at the moment. It's bonkers.
Unbelievable. Anyway, thanks for joining us. Thanks for our Patreon backers. I hope you enjoyed that rendition of the classic REM hit, It's the end of the pod as we know it. do join us next week. In the meantime, if you want to get involved, do go to the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum, where you can submit questions and chat to other podcast listeners about stuff and ting.
You can, and people who don't know that do a podcast.
Yeah, go on there. In fact, if you're listening to the end of the podcast, what I want you to do is go on to the Facebook group and talk about the podcast, because there's a lot of people in the group. And I don't think all of them know that it's connected to the podcast.
There's over 2,000 people in that group now, and definitely a lot of them don't listen. Like, I actually accepted one of my friends into the group today, and I'm almost 100% certain he didn't know that it was me who was an admin, and that it's a group about the podcast. I'm almost 100% sure.
So what I want you to do is introduce... If you've made it to the end of this podcast through that nonsense song that we just did, you're obviously quite a loyal podcast listener. What,
no, it's just that they're driving and they can't...
turn it off.
They're waiting for, like... for the next episode of...
Serial.
Of Serial to come up, yeah, and we're just here waffling on.
Indeed, indeed. So what I want you to do is find someone in the Facebook group who doesn't know that it's a podcast and introduce them to the podcast. It's like find a friend. It's like Tinder. Can you match with someone in the group? We need to Tinderize this bad boy. Anyway, you can also join us on Twitter at Guitar Nerds or on Instagram at Guitar Nerds or on Periscope at Guitar Nerds. You can also go to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/Guitar Nerds. Videos for loads of fun and games on there. Or you can follow us if you want to hear a man having basically a war with Southern Rail. You can go to @Mark_random. If you want to follow Matt, you can go to @Matt_Nightsy. And if you want to follow Jay, you can go to JAYBN1.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening this week, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, gang.
Cheers.
Bye.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.